welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dell, NAB Trade's Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour. In our recent episode about retirement, we talked about the four key elements of enduring the period after you finish work. Not just fluffy stuff, but based on incredibly thorough research meticulously undertaken by my guest today. That guest, Phil Augustine, is a researcher and strategist in the field of retirement as a senior manager at MLC, and his insights are particularly powerful in helping us think more holistically about retirement. Today, we're going to go into a bit more detail about each of these pillars that we discussed in the last episode and how you can prepare for each of these elements to really make the most of the next phase of your life. Phil, thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, Gemma. It's a pleasure to be here.
Phil, can you just run us back quickly through the four pillars again to put things into context?
Sure. So retirement research suggests that there are four pillars of retirement happiness. When you're planning for retirement, you should think about financials, you should think about your relationship, health and well-being, and having a purpose, staying relevant. And this is all about making sure you think about your life and your retirement holistically to ensure you get the best out of it.
So we made plenty of comments in the last podcast that, you know, we're really good at focusing on the financial, and I think for many people that makes sense because it's tangible. You've got a very specific number to work towards or whatever it might be, and you can, you know, a lot of people like to think money is a way of keeping score, right? But you can keep score on whether or not you're going to meet your goals based on your numbers, whereas the other pillars are much less tangible, I guess. Yeah. Certainly not quite so numerical if you're numerically minded, but absolutely essential to enjoying your life.
Absolutely. And they're more emotional if you're emotional and mental. And this is why it's actually more difficult to try and prepare for that, because it's about relationships in particular. It's about having those relationships, building those relationships your whole life. Mm. And that comes with trust. And whether they be social or personal relationships, particularly relationships, which has got an emotional, which is all about emotional elements. So it's about making sure you've got that, those social relationships and personal relationships. One of the key elements about relationships is making sure that we can replace those social connections that we had in work with connections outside work. So if you have strong relationships or strong work connections that you've had your whole work life and they continue after into your retirement, well, that's fantastic. But for a lot of people, that doesn't happen. And it's about how do you replace that? How do you replace that social connection that you require, that we all require, there's emotional connections, to make sure that we keep happy both mentally and emotionally in our retirement as well. I think that's one of the key elements that people forget about. And it's not something you can plan for in terms of, well, I'm going to get a new friend. It's about thinking about it as well. It's about, well, what do I do? How do I fulfill that now? So that's another key element. So that's the relationship part. The health and well-being, well, that goes without saying. If you've been healthy during your younger years, research shows that you'll continue that as you get older, because motivation is what gets you started, but habit is what keeps you going. So and by being healthier, you're giving yourself the best chance of living the retirement that you want, because you're giving yourself time and options. And then the last one is purpose. And this is all about making sure you've got goals set in place, making sure you can transition to retirement and have a fulfilling retirement. This is all about replacing the 40 or 50 hours you normally work in a work week and making sure you actually replace them with the things that you want to do, the experiences, the hobbies, the passions that you want to follow, but make sure you've got a plan in place. And the plan doesn't have to be for 5, 10, 15 years. It can be for the first 12 months to see how you go. And I think this is another misconception that a lot of people have. I need to plan for 30 years. Well, not really. You don't need to start. You can start planning, right? But you can look to the bigger picture of 30 years, but only plan 2 or 3 years or even 12 months and see how that works for you. Everyone's different. So it's about finding the best way to reach your retirement goals.
So Phil, I'm going to start with the financial one. As I said, you have a numerical target for many people. And so working on a numerical target you know whether you win or lose, right? It's not about winning or losing, but it's very much about working towards something tangible. And I think it's also the element that is best served currently. It is the area that certainly the finance industry focuses on. I mean, we give people lots of support and material and all those sorts of things. We spend a lot of time on the financial side because that's what we know about. We're not that great at helping people with their relationships and so on. But how would you suggest that people get started thinking about preparing financially for retirement?
Before I answer that question, one of the things I want to say is it is the thing that people concentrate on the most. But it's also the element that causes a lot of confusion for people. Yeah. Because everyone thinks that there's a magical number that they need to reach.
Yes.
There isn't, of course, a magical figure. It all depends on each individual and what their goals are. So if you ask me how I tell people to prepare, it would be about looking at the lifestyle that they want to live in retirement. And thinking about what the cost of that lifestyle might look like. And from there, you can work out. And then you think about how long you might be retired for. So with life expectancies increasing, you might be retired for 25, 30, 35 years, for example. So then it's about extrapolating those numbers, obviously, and thinking about what might be the right number for you, what might be the right target for you. And then looking at all your income sources, both inside and outside superannuation, and of course the age pension if you're eligible for it, and then working out a plan. And then whether or not, if you're on target to reach that plan, if you're not, you may want to seek professional advice from a financial advisor. You may want to talk to your family and friends. You may want to talk to other people who are going through similar similar experiences, who or other people who have already retired to learn from their experiences as well. But then there are many things you can do to build your retirement savings inside super. You can make salary sacrifice. You can make voluntary contributions. You can take advantage of the catch-up concessional contributions which just came into play. So there are a number of opportunities there, but once again, before you do anything, you should actually seek financial advice before you make a decision.
So one thing I think that is incredibly advantageous for people is just the sheer volume of information that's out there that is really high quality. You know, there's great info out there. I mean, stay away from the, you know, you can make $7,000 a day currency trading type stuff. That's probably not the place to start when you're thinking about your retirement. But certainly ASIC, you know, some of the regulators put out really high quality information. I know that on the MLC website, you've worked on a lot of stuff, which is great. So people go and look at calculators and tools. There are, I think this is really important, the age pension is a safety net for a very large proportion of the retired population, like 80%. Yeah. So if you don't know what the age pension is, how much it is, and what you need to do in order to be eligible for it, go and find out, because it is a safety net there for a lot of people. Understand that first and foremost. Then have a look at what you've got, what you can save towards. Use some calculators to go, okay, if I want an income of $50,000 a year, which is what, you know, it's around the ASFA comfortable retirement standard for a couple. Is that right?
Yeah,
about
60
now. Goodness, I haven't been looking at my numbers. Okay, 60,000 if you want a comfortable retirement according to ASFA. But that includes some holidays and many other nice things. Yeah. So it's very much designed to be comfortable. Have a look at how much you would need as a lump sum, how long it would take you, all those sorts of things. So you can, there's a lot of information out there that helps you quantify what you need. And then, as you say, you can work back through the strategies that are available to help you get to that number.
Absolutely. A lot of people we spoke to, now you've got to understand this demographic, they're motivated and they have an immediate need. But a lot of the people we spoke to said exactly what you've said. They want to do their own research. They've got time. They want to learn about it. This is their life savings. This is what's going to last them for the rest of their life. They don't want to make any hasty decisions. So they want to do their own research. But what a lot of people struggle with is, where do I find the research and where do I start? So like you said, ASIC, you can go to any of the Superfund websites if you'd like. We've got a fantastic website on mlc.com, which can help you with all this information as well. But it's about where you start, and it's about having a plan in place. And then doing your research so you can feel confident, but most importantly, make more informed decisions. And I think it's the not knowing, am I making the right decision, that causes people anxiety. So, and then once you've made the decision and once you're up to a point, if you then think you need financial advice, by all means, right? Get the advice so then you can confirm those decisions and have understand your options and trade-offs, because that's really important as well.
So we know that having a secure financial future is essential, and certainly financial loss in retirement can be really anxiety-inducing for people. You and I both know people who were retired shortly after the GFC or shortly before the GFC, which was possibly worse for many people, or who had other cataclysmic financial experiences that really threw them in it, you know, that caused them a lot of distress. So getting on top of your financial future is really important, but it's not the only thing. So let's talk about health, because this is an area, thankfully, where there is huge amounts of information in the public domain. Any diet you choose to follow has probably been endorsed by somebody at some point. You know, so many amazing things you can do. How should retirees and pre-retirees be thinking about their health as a key pillar of their future happiness?
Well, before we start talking about health, I just want to clarify, when we speak about health, or when we talk about health, we're talking about mental and physical health. Mm. It's really important that we actually acknowledge that, because mental health is a rapidly rising issue in this country, and we need to start talking about it as a society, particularly for older Australians as well now. So it's really important that when we talk about health, we're talking about both the mental and the physical side. And with anything, health is paramount. Without health, you don't have the time, because the most important thing that health gives you is time. So if you're in your younger years and you were always healthy, chances are you're going to continue that. But if you're older and you want to start, there's a number of different activities you can start with. It could be as easy as walking your dog every day, or walking with a group of friends, swimming. There's a lot of swimming classes, or if you just want to go to the beach. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be vigorous. Obviously, you need to talk to your doctor or your financial...
You never know, you might have a really fit financial advisor who could help you.
I meant to say consult your health professional before starting any physical activity. But it's never too late to start your physical, to start being healthy. Mm. But what that does is, once again, motivation is what gets you started, but habit is what keeps you going. Mm. And you feel better as well, because obviously being healthy, it has both physical and mental effects. Positive effects.
People can't see this. I know nothing about your personal routine, Phil, but I'm going to take a punt, you're pretty fit. So I think that you look after your physical fitness, and I agree that it does make a dramatic difference. Like, it does help.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all about having a positive attitude as well. And why I say that is, a positive attitude is really, really important, because you're now transitioning to a new phase. And that phase has got quite a few unknowns. And you're aging as well. So for a lot of people, it might come with cognitive decline as well, as sad as that is. But it is. And it's you're facing an unknown. So you've got to have a positive mindset and make sure that you keep your body in the best shape you possibly can, so you can actually enjoy retirement, because that's what it's there for. I mean, it's your retirement.
It's an interesting one also. So a lot of the physical activities that you may want to get involved in do give you the opportunity to socialise and work on some other elements of your overall retirement happiness. So we'll talk about relationships in a little while, but I used in the last podcast the example of my mother-in-law. So she lives in Tasmania. It's an old estate. They provide... from a government perspective and a sort of quasi-government organisation perspective, lots of social activities with a health orientation for older people. And so they have these walking clubs, and the university has different programs for older people. They also, it's great for research for universities. They love it, right? So you've got a cohort of people and you invite them in to be part of your research, and you learn about the impact of different types of activity for people, whether they benefit them greater or lesser than something else, for example. And she has become involved in all of these different activities. Her health is insane. She's so strong and so fit for someone of her age. And the activities exist. You know, she simply just had to go out and find them and choose to engage with them. But the other thing that's been really fabulous about it is it's given her new groups of friends and new people to interact with.
Absolutely. And the most important thing is...
And they're mostly free as well, as the other thing.
Yeah. And I think with an ageing population, you're going to see more and more of that. Mm-hmm. But the most important thing is, in your grandmother's case, or your mother-in-law?
This is my mother-in-law.
Your mother-in-law's case?
My grandmother is 90 Well, one was 96, the other one was 102.
She actually started. She got out there, she did her research, and she joined. And for most people, that's the hardest step. It's actually starting something new.
Mm.
But once you start, you're right. You get all these benefits because in a lot of cases, it is free. You will meet a lot of like-minded people who share the same values and same interests. So it's fantastic. And it's the having the mind, shifting your mindset of something hasn't finished, but you're beginning something new.
Mm.
So I think that's really important as well to remember.
So the third one we're going to go on to is this issue of staying relevant and having a purpose. And I'm going to give an anecdote which feels very relevant to me right now. This is a very recent experience. So last weekend I was at the Australian of the Year Awards, which I was extremely privileged to be at. It had nothing to do with anything I ever achieved, for sure. But it honours people who've done incredible things in Australia. And my dad had been nominated as Senior Australian of the Year. So he's 68. Yeah. Well, as I said, nothing to do with me. It's probably a hindrance rather than a help. He's 68. The category is for those over 65. So he wasn't eligible for the ordinary Australian of the Year. That was won by the two cave divers who saved the Thai boys. Yep. So unbelievably worthy recipients, but every person who was nominated had done incredibly beautiful things. And he was nominated in the senior category. So there were Australians from every state and territory who'd been nominated. And some had given up work and were retired. Some were still working. Dad is working ridiculous hours at 68, and it talks about going part-time, but his part-time is probably more serious than most people's full-time. One of the nominees was in her 90s. They were doing amazing things. And if you would like an example of people who have retired in inverted commas, but are still making very powerful contributions far beyond their working years, this was amazing. I mean, they were just, it was astonishing what they were up to. And it became quite interesting when you consider the longevity of people, because all of them were very fit and healthy for their age. And I felt walking away like, these are not people who are aging, right? They are still working flat out and giving everything they've got. And clearly, because they had such a strong sense of purpose, they were all doing amazing things.
That's fantastic. And you're actually getting that more and more in Australia now. So more and more Australians are actually working longer and staying in the workforce longer. The intentions to retire. So the people who said who are going to retire after the age of 70 has tripled in the last decade according to ABS, intentions to retire survey. more and more people are actually wanting to work because they see that purpose. But unfortunately, for a lot of people, retirement comes due to an unplanned life event as well. So we've got to acknowledge that as well. Mm-hmm. And by unplanned life event, I mean it could be anything to do with a health issue, redundancy, divorce, or death of a partner, for example. They're the major health or major unplanned life events that can cause retirement premature. And for those people, it's the hardest because it's happened very suddenly.
Yeah.
And it's very abrupt, and they need to make that adjustment quickly. And it's very hard because emotionally, they've got to take on the emotional baggage of what's actually happened to them, and then equally make that adjustment. It's so important to have that support network, family, friends, both inside work, outside work, to support you and help you through that. You can talk to people. There's government websites you can go to. You can go to our website and see some of the things that you can do to help you through that. But it's the most important thing is to make sure that you get the support that you need during those times as well. And from then you reassess your situation after you've adjusted for the shock. You can then look back, reassess your situation, and then move forward. So for a lot of people who where retirement comes due to an unplanned life event, it's very different to those who've actually planned or continue working in retirement, working in the later years. The other thing is, even when you retire, you can still work. You can be part of the gig economy, for example, which is taking off, right? And they can have barter systems like they do now. So that's actually taking off as well. Doesn't matter how you find a way to have a purpose or stay relevant. It's about making sure that whatever you do keeps you happy, right? And that's the most important thing and keeps you moving.
So one that is interesting that you mentioned in the last episode where we were talking about this is this the massive rise of volunteering and how it does allow people who aren't working anymore to give back. It gives them a sense of purpose and so on. One that I think is quite interesting, and it may have come through in those senior Australian nominees, was that they had this incredible skill set in many cases. They were doctors and, you know, they'd done incredible things, or a lot of them were researchers and scientists, and my father's a scientist, and they were taking, and the woman who won was a paediatrician who'd worked in the field of child abuse, of all things, and they were taking the skills that they'd had in their professional lives, and had they left work, many had not, but had they left work, they were then volunteering their skills and their time or their expertise, not necessarily their skills, but teaching the next generation. The woman who was in her 90s had been an early maths pioneer, a woman in her 90s, right? And, you know, and she's going around telling particularly young women to get involved in maths and science. You know, so she's giving back to the community in that way, and it gives her that strong sense of purpose. So volunteering seems to be one way that people are really keeping themselves relevant and keeping their minds alive.
It's interesting you say that, because the people we spoke to who do volunteering, the sense of purpose that they've got, and just the ability to give back and what that means to them, it's they get so much joy out of it. We spoke to a number of different people who volunteer. Some teach English to refugees, some do community gardens, others do rural aid and get their hands dirty and plant trees. So you can do many, many different things. RSPCA, obviously.
Rotary used to be very big, and Lions Club and those things. They still
I don't know how big they are today, but I was just, when I was doing this research, I found a myriad of volunteering activities. But just the most important thing was talking to people who volunteer, and just the sense of pride they get of giving back to community, that made them feel so good. The other thing that interestingly I found was how many new friends they made when they were volunteering, which you alluded to earlier, and finding like-minded people as well, and beginning new friendships with people who had same values, who shared the same values with them, all in the time of giving back as well. And it also kept them busy, which was fantastic. It has fantastic health benefits, both mentally and physically as well. So there are a lot of benefits just by getting out there and offering your services to the community and giving back.
And your skills, I guess, it can be challenging when you are not working to feel that you have any skills of value. So I imagine talking to a volunteering organisation. So there are, when I looked into volunteering when I was at university, this is quite a while ago, pre-internet, God knows how I even found it. I don't even know how I found it. How did it happen? Must have scrabbled together out of the newspaper. I don't know what I did. But they had a list of people that they were looking for with different types of skills, and an infinite list of charities and organisations looking for volunteers. So there would be aggregators everywhere, I imagine, who do this kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Volunteering.org, those sorts of things.
I think there's Volunteering in Australia. I think that's the biggest, and that's got different categories. Different categories of depend. And they're actually, there's another site, I forgot the name of it now, but we have done research on it, that matches your skill set to the volunteering
to the groups that
need your help. Like I said, you just have to start. There's plenty of options out there, but the hardest thing for people is actually starting. Right, and that's it. And you'll see the benefits. You'll see the benefits straight away.
So the next one, the final one, is this role of relationships. We know from huge amounts of research, not necessarily related to retirement, that relationships are essential to all facets of human health and happiness. What sort of relationships are we talking about specifically when it comes to retirement? Is there anything in particular, and how do you go about reinforcing them?
Yeah, this is probably the hardest one. Look, there's no silver bullet here. Relationship is hard work. Any relationship is hard work, and it takes time to develop and nurture. For those who are lucky enough to have a really strong social connection and have those network of family, friends, both inside and outside work, and have a really social network, really strong social network, research shows for those people, their transition to retirement is a lot easier than for those who don't. For those,
they're probably people who are thriving anyway, right?
Yeah.
So the transition to a new phase of their lives where they thrive will be less challenging.
And it's also shown that a lot of these people, they're a lot busier and active in their lives as well. So that's another thing. By having a large social network, you've got different avenues, different friends, and different options, obviously, when you retire. But those who don't have such a strong social network find it a lot more difficult and find themselves a lot more alienated, isolated, and feeling those feelings. So it's so those are the things that you really need to work on, but it's very, very difficult. That's not to say that you can't start. Obviously, the example we gave with volunteering earlier and finding new friends is very, very important. But for those, the most important thing, once again, is getting started. It is difficult. Obviously, building relationships anytime is difficult. And if you don't have those relationships already with family or friends, then I think the best thing to do is go out there and really find new interests and hobbies and make new friends that way socially and join social groups.
One thing as a bit of a warning, which is not something I would generally be enthusiastic about doing but worth doing, is when you are transitioning into this new phase and you may find yourself lonely, ensure that when you are going out seeking new relationships with people, you're doing it in an environment where it's going to be constructive.
Yeah.
So one of the real challenges that can happen is people start going down to the local unnamed gambling front door on the high street because they're lonely and they want to spend time around other people who are like-minded and they like racing or whatever it might be. But that can lead to a downward spiral and there's a real, really tragic cohort of people who have spending a bit too much time in pokies or in the pub because that's where they've gone to make social connections. So thinking about other ways to make social connections is really important.
Yeah, and ensure it has a positive effect. So you're absolutely correct. It's very easy to go down a downward spiral and very quickly as well. But make sure that if you do find yourself in this situation, that you find hobbies and interests that'll have a positive effect on you. And you're joining those communities that will definitely have a positive impact on your mindset as well. Because then that builds as well.
Yeah.
You can easily increase and have a positive attitude just as quickly as you can go down.
I think your point as well about, you know, it's challenging to do this stuff. Sometimes it's challenging to take the first step, but the second step's very easy.
Absolutely.
You know, you open a door and suddenly you've got 20 new friends who really love cycling or community gardens or whatever it might be, and you've got a great new cohort of friends and you're doing something physical and you're feeling really engaged with the world, and that's great.
And that's a really, really good point. The second step is easier, and I'll tell you why. A lot of people we spoke to are in the same boat as you, right? So that's what people forget. There are a lot of people...
Sorry, just remind people, because you said this in the last podcast, your research has come from one-on-one interviews with people. And
yeah, so we did customer interviews and ethnographic research. Ethnographic research is where we go to people's houses and see how they live and talk to them in their own surroundings so they're comfortable and we can see firsthand this is their life. Mm. Customer research is where they come and we sit in the office or in an office one-on-one. But yeah, so...
So these are real stories.
These are real stories. This
not
is
sitting
this
in an office telling everyone how it should be. You spoke to hundreds of people about...
Yeah, that's right, over a long, long time, and both professionally and personally. So I've done it.
Yeah, I'm full of anecdotes. You've done that.
Yeah, so I've done it in my personal life as well. But there are a lot of people like you, so don't be afraid and definitely take that first step and enjoy it. The most important thing is make sure you enjoy it.
So I'm going to get really nerdy here. I love a to-do list like nobody's business. I find it helps me focus on what needs to be done. If you were thinking about retirement, I'm a little way off yet, but if one were thinking about retirement in the next, say, 5 years, you know you've got four major areas of your life to think about. Do you just get out a blank piece of paper for each of them and go, I've got three goals for each of these areas, and here's 10 ideas about how I might do something about it? How would you suggest people constructively action the next step?
That depends, once again, on the individual. Everyone's got different ways of working, right? So some people are very organized and say, you know, this is how I'm going to do it. I'll, as you said, I'll make a list. I'll put 10 dot points and I'll and it's a process of elimination. I'll pick the top three, for example. Others think, no, this is just what I want. This is the lifestyle I want. Mm. Right? I've got the social aspect. I've got my friends. This is the lifestyle. Mm. So there's not a one size fits all, and that's totally fine. I can't give you a template, unfortunately. The most important thing is that you're thinking about it. Mm. That's the most important thing. Once you start thinking about it, and this is a process, once you start thinking about it, you might think about the financial side. Then if you're thinking about the relationships or the health and well-being, at least you're thinking about it. Mm. And you're actually, then after you think about it, you're actually going to put some steps in place to make sure you achieve those goals. So the most important thing you're doing already. Mm. But the earlier you start, the more options you give yourself. Mm. And that's the most important thing. It doesn't matter how you get there. You can take 100 different ways to get there as long as you get there and as long as you start thinking about it. With the financial aspect, obviously, you can talk to family, friends, you can talk to a financial advisor if you want. Mm-hmm. But with the others, that's up to you. Your health and well-being, no one can change but you. You need to make the first move. Mm-hmm. Same with purpose, having a purpose in retirement, talk to family and friends. But once again, you need to do that. And same with relationships as well. You need to obviously build those and make sure they're there. But once you've got that, you can actually come up with, like you said, what are the top 10 things I want to achieve in the first 5 years of retirement, for example? Mm. And that gives you goals, clear goals.
Mm, better purpose.
Better purpose. Mm. And then you can mark them off, or you can change them after 12 months. Mm. I mean, this is your time. That's the beauty of retirement. You can change your plans anytime you want because there's no boss. You are your boss. Mm. And as long as you've got the flexibility to do that, you've got your health, it can be the best adventure you've ever had.
So one last comment I will make, because I think there's a lot of behavior change in this process, right?
Absolutely.
Because the behaviors that you were using in your working life just aren't relevant anymore in many cases. So you have behavior change. There's actually spectacular research and insights and material around now about behavior change. If that's something you're interested in, you go, how do I go from being this person to this person? There's a brilliant book called Better Than Before by a woman named Gretchen Rubin that has, she's very structured. So she's numbered them all these different strategies for changing your life effectively. I want to make a change from this period to this period, and this is what's going to happen. So if you are looking at this going, oh my goodness, I don't know how to change this much, it's going to happen anyway, there is actually research around the change process and what you can do, and you know, they're nice, easy, friendly books to read. It doesn't have to be hard. Phil, you've put a whole lot of collateral into the world. Where do people go to find out more?
Well, they can go to mlc.com.au, click on the retirement tab, and they'll find a lot more information about a lot of the things we've spoken about today. And hopefully that'll get them started on their own journey.
Thank you. What's really great about that, Tim, is that they can, you know, there are links through to lots and lots of different resources as well. So really practical stuff.
Absolutely.
Phil, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
As always, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. We hope it has been helpful in your journey to creating wealth. We always love to hear from you, so if you have any feedback or suggestions for future topics, please just email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. I'm Gemma Dale. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.